This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Yesterday in Okinawa, three American servicemen, two from the Navy, one from the Marines, were convicted by a Japanese court of abducting and raping a 12-year-old Japanese girl last September. After the rape, demonstrators poured into the streets to protest against the U.S. presence in Okinawa. One admiral lost his job after telling reporters that the servicemen should have hired a prostitute instead. This incident hit the Navy especially hard, coming on the heels of Tailhook. My guest, Gregory Vistica, broke the Tailhook story in 1991 when he was a reporter with the San Diego Union-Tribune. He was the first to report on the sexual abuse of naval women at the Tailhook Convention. Now he's written a book about Tailhook and other scandals within the Navy pertaining to sexual harassment, spending, and corruption. Vistica's new book is called Fall from Glory, The Men Who Sank the U.S. Navy. I asked him how he got the first information about Tailhook.
I was having lunch with a Navy commander, and we were sitting across the bay from an aircraft carrier, and he said something bad happened to Tailhook this year. I don't know much about it, but it had something to do with a gauntlet and several women being forced to walk through it. And the gauntlet, as we know, was a hallway at the Las Vegas Hilton where women were sexually assaulted when they were forced to walk down it. It was Friday afternoon. And at the time, I was working for a newspaper called the San Diego Union-Tribune, a big Navy town, a conservative newspaper, which is a whole other story, how that thing finally got out. And I went back on Friday, and I started hitting the phones, and by the end of the day, I had enough information to know that something indeed had gone bad. The paper wanted to hold it over the weekend to do more work on it. Monday, I got a letter from the president of the Tailhook Association, Captain Fred Ludwig, outlining the gauntlet and showing that five women had been sexually assaulted.
How did you get that letter?
I had built up a large source network within the military. I've been covering the military for quite a number of years. And I knew who had it. After a couple calls, I found the guy who had it, and he agreed to give it to me, so I actually drove on to Miramar Naval Air Station, home to Top Gun, to get the letter. And I was sitting in this office reading this thing, and I was just thinking, my gosh, this is a smoking gun if I've ever seen it. Here's a Navy captain outlining sexual abuse of women, drunkenness, misuse of funds, you name it, and it's in black and white. There's no way the Navy is going to be able to deny it. I came back Monday, wrote the story, called the Secretary of the Navy, asked for a comment, faxed him the letter, and the next day they began all of their big investigations.
The letter that you got, who was that letter intended for?
That letter was intended for the skippers, the squadron commanders. In the Navy, there's several squadrons, and each squadron has a commanding officer. And Fred Ludwig, who was the head of Tailhook, a Navy captain, wrote the letter directed to them, telling them, basically, knock this off. You know, we can't tolerate this kind of stuff. But in doing so, he listed all of the problems that had happened, that had occurred at Tailhook. And for what he did, for what he thought he was doing was right, the Navy tried to court-martial him and hold him accountable for all of the sins of Tailhook that year, yet there was 33 admirals there, and nothing happened to them. And Fred Ludwig went through some very emotional turmoil as a result of that, and he is now out of the Navy.
What did he say in that letter?
First off, he said this was the mother of all hooks, and it was a great hook, as they called Tailhook. The Secretary of the Navy was there. He enjoyed himself. The Chief of Naval Operations enjoyed himself. You know, it was a successful reunion of Navy pilots after the Persian Gulf War, etc. However, I do have some bad news to report, and he went in and talked about the gauntlet, about sexual abuse of women, including a young teenage girl that had been pushed down the gauntlet and thrown into the corner after she had gone through this. She had been stripped naked, as a matter of fact, and just thrown into the corner. Some pretty incredible stuff like that was in the letter.
Did they ever try to deny it?
They never, that's a very good question. They never really denied it outright, but they would always put their spin on it as, oh, those women knew what they were getting into. they should have never gone up there on the third floor. And, oh, the admirals just didn't have a clue what was going on. And the secretary, although he had been there 2 years in a row in 1990 and 1991, he didn't know what was going on. Those types of efforts to downplay it and to put the Navy spin on it. And quite frankly, all I had to do was sit back almost every other day and watch the Navy step on their foot and make some misstatement in their effort to try to spin it and put there and cover it up. And I just kept getting story after story, and I ended up writing nearly 150 stories on it.
Now, that naval commander who you first had lunch with, who first informed you that there was sexual misconduct at Tail Hook, did he have any idea the magnitude of the story he was giving you?
It's interesting, because I just spoke with him the other day. He's still shaking his head today, wondering if he had done the right thing. He didn't understand the magnitude. I don't think I understood the magnitude that this was going to have wholesale impact, not just on the Navy, but on all of the services. And indeed, it's touched into the civilian world as well. I wonder, and I sometimes wonder, if he would have, if he knew that, if he would have not passed that stuff on to me.
Well, do you think that he thinks that the impact that it had on the Navy was bad?
I think he thinks it was both bad and good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it has torn the Navy apart. In any big historical change in an organization, you're going to get the good caught up with the bad. I mean, look at the Inquisition, for example. I mean, that's happening in the Navy today. There's a lot of innocent people that are being dismissed because they had the tailhook mark on their records, even though they didn't do anything wrong. They just happened to be at the convention for some reason. And they can't be promoted, then they're forced into retirement.
But on the good side, you think that the breaking the story helped reform the Navy?
Very much so. The Navy public affairs people will tell you that the Navy only changes when they're exposed doing something wrong. This was a monumental watershed event, and it's had tremendous impact for the better for women. The Navy promised to promote more women to admirals. They're trying to sensitize males toward women. They're making fairly honest efforts to eradicate sexual harassment and demeaning attitudes toward women. I dare say, though, they've got a very uphill battle still ahead of them.
How much has the leadership changed?
I think, indeed, they have changed for the better. The civilian leadership, John Dalton, it says he will not tolerate sins of moral turpitude, and so far he's standing firm on that. I don't think the admirals have changed at all. They're still very political. They're still more concerned with their careers. As a matter of fact, I did a Pentagon book signing a couple of weeks ago at the Pentagon, and a former naval investigative service guy came by, and we got on the subject about what's wrong with the admirals. Why are they so political? And he says they take an oath to the Navy and not to the nation. They're going to defend the Navy at all cost. And if you go back and look at all of the scandals that the Navy has been involved in each one, the Navy circles the wagons, they wrap themselves in the flag, and they do whatever they can to protect the Navy. And that includes lying, misleading the public, putting out the wrong story, you name it, and eventually it catches up with them.
When you were first investigating the Tail Hook story, you tried to get women who were there and who were victimized to talk with you. What was it like in those early days to try to get women to go on the record and tell you what happened?
Well, one person in particular who I had a long chat with on the first night was Paula Coughlin, who became probably one of the most celebrated victims of Tail Hook. She, in the beginning, was very nervous about it. And she started, we had several conversations in the first, before I even broke the first story. And she started warming up to the idea about talking with me. And we set some ground rules and all. And I called her the Admiral's aide, which was quickly picked up in the mainstream press. And I'd also talked with other women. And most the women officers who I was able to get a hold of were scared to death. They didn't want their names out because they feared for their careers. And eventually, after many, interviews and coaxing them, And I think I had built up a reputation by my stories of fairness and objectivity, and people started coming forward, including more women, to talk with me.
You broke the Tailhook story for a newspaper in San Diego, and San Diego is a large military town. There's a lot of there's a big Navy base there. And you described the newspaper that you were writing for as a conservative newspaper. Was the newspaper reluctant to go with the story?
I don't say much about that, but they were, yes, they were reluctant to go with the story. It ran, when I broke the Tailhook story, it didn't run on page one. It ran inside the newspaper. And here you had this major event taking place where the Secretary of the Navy was at this convention, the Chief of Naval Operations was at this convention. You had officers and gentlemen, Top Gun flyers, the end of the Persian Gulf War, and you had sexual assaults of women in a so-called gauntlet. It's a pretty important story. And it ran inside the paper. It was very frustrating. And it was an uphill battle trying to continue to cover the story at the paper.
Do you have any more or less faith in the ability of a large institution to change?
If we just focus on the Navy, I don't have much faith that they're really going to change. As much as they say they're going to improve things, quite frankly, I think a lot of it is lip service, because you see this trend continue. Demeaning attitudes toward women, you know, officers getting off for certain crimes.
Have you ever been in the service yourself?
No, actually, I was the last draft of the Vietnam War in 1972. My lottery number was number 6, and I was ready to go. Not willing, I wasn't excited about going in, but unfortunately, we were reclassified eligible till we were 26 years old. But I come from a Navy family.
You come from a Navy family?
Right. And we would sit around the dining room table. I mean, I've got Academy graduates, fighter pilots, a doctor. Most of them are out now. But we would sit around the table and have these discussions about what's wrong with the Navy. And I kept hearing horror stories and horror stories over and over and over again. And that was another reason why I decided to get into the book. I basically come from a blue-collar family, working-class family. You know, we're the little guys, and you always see the big guys getting off. And so I wanted to write a book for the junior-level officers and to show, you know, the troubles and travails that they face.
Well, Greg Vistica, thank you very much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Gregory Vistica's new book is called Fall from Glory, The Men Who Sank the U.S. Navy. He's now the Washington correspondent for Newsweek. This is Fresh Air.